The Nonprofit Happy Hour is a weekly look at Portland's nonprofits and do-gooders with interviews, music, and documentaries. You're listening to the Nonprofit Happy Hour on X-Ray FM, brought to you by the Media Institute for Social Change, a public interest media lab that works to inspire, empower, and engage emerging media producers. Learn more online at mediamakingchange.org. Today on the Nonprofit Happy Hour, we're spotlighting local food justice nonprofit Food Waves. Join them as a volunteer for Earth Day or visit them at the PSU Farmers Market.
Matthew Brown is co-executive director and community outreach for Food Waves. This is the Nonprofit Happy Hour. And how's your day going?
It's going good. I'm fighting a skunk underneath my office in my backyard.
You found a skunk in your...
Yeah, during the cold, start digging under my office, and I built an office in the backyard and start digging under there. And I don't know if my dogs are a loud sound or something, but it fired. So my whole office just reeks of skunk. And I'm out, yeah. And it's been like this war. And for a couple of nights, I couldn't find any digging. And then I just went out to grab my cord because I was kind of low on energy. And on my battery, and it found a way under again. The thing's beating me.
It's always humbling, right? When some sort of critter or rodent can be more clever.
I don't know. Just like you can find little tiny holes and like dig in between. I'm putting bricks and logs, and I'm gonna have to do the rabbit trick, you know, where you put like chicken wire down, like you staple it up, and then you dig it down, you dig it out, and then when it tries to dig in, it gets caught in the wire. I'm basically going to have to treat it like it's a rabbit.
I just learned something new. Thank you.
Yeah. So rabbits, it's like if there's a fence, like say here's the ground and here's the fence, a rabbit will dig right here. So if you put the chicken wire down like 4 inches and out, like maybe 6 to 8 inches, the rabbit will walk up, dig right here, realize it can't go, but it doesn't realize it could just dig, go under. So it's the way you protect your garden against rabbits.
Wow. So, good to know that we can sometimes be more clever.
Well, you have to work like a day and spend like $100.
Right. Well, hey, let's just jump into this. So
yeah.
You're part of Earth Day Oregon. And let's just start with you guys can be found. People may already know you from the PSU Farmers Market. Is that right?
Yeah, we started at the Portland Farmers Market in 2011, so we're just about to start our 13th season. We usually show up around mid-April, and we're there until the weekend before Thanksgiving. But we have also worked all throughout Clackamas County with our garden education outreach.
Yeah, I was going to say, and sorry about the pun, but the roots go deeper than not just, but having a booth. There's more to... The booth is sort of one of the most maybe public facing, but tell us what Food Waves does.
We're a food justice nonprofit, and food justice is just working for the environment, for the community, and for access to healthy food. And our nonprofit emphasizes on the access to healthy food. So if you're at the farmer's market, you are paying for local, fresh, seasonal, sustainable produce, and it can get quite pricey. So we try to reach out to communities that are in need of food assistance, maybe education on why to eat healthy, fresh, sustainable, seasonal produce. So we also have demonstration gardens throughout Clackamas County. And there we teach people how to grow their own food as affordable as possible. You know, we all know gardeners or friends that are always trying to pass off squash and tomatoes on us because they have too much. It all shows up at the same time. They can't eat it all. And we also all have friends who can't grow very much at all. So if you want to grow healthy food, like a bunch of kale or a pound of spinach or something that's good for your, your body and your mind and your overall health, it can get expensive if you go to a farmer's market. If you're able to meet with us at one of our trainings or one of our demo gardens, we can give you the supplies and the education to grow your own food as affordable as possible. And then grow it successfully, not just have a pot or a garden bed and you spend $40 at a local, you know, garden store like Home Depot or Lowe's or wherever, and you end up growing nothing. So you lost $40. So how do you get your value? So if you can't afford the stuff, we try to help you get the stuff through, you know, just giving you the pots and the soil and the seeds. And then we also try to teach you how to be able to grow it and harvest it and eat it. And then why it's important. One of the few things that people may or may not know is how much fruit and vegetables they need to eat in different colors. And it gets expensive. And then why you eat that food. 40% of the calories that we eat goes to our brain, feeding our brain. And if you're eating, food-like products and not real food, you're not feeding your brain very well. And if you're not feeding your brain well, you're not feeding your body well, then your immune system breaks down, all the above, missed days at work. So, yeah, we're really just trying to teach people the value of healthy food.
That's a big spectrum.
We try to take on the world.
Yeah. I love the idea you mentioned in there, the different colors. My son's five. I just started a food rainbow with him this week because, boy, we get a lot of reds. He loves strawberries, raspberries. He loves his blueberries, but I cannot get green into that kid at all. So trying to speak to his competitive nature so that he'll at least be able to check off the greens. But those can be tricky.
Yeah, those aren't our people's favorites. Collards, kale, spinach. You know, those aren't what broccoli. Not every kid's just like, I want a plate of broccoli. Important though, to eat your greens.
Absolutely. So I would assume that some of the revenue though from the farmers market is what supports your nonprofit. Is that right?
Yeah. So we have two different programs. One's a farm based. Well, one of our programs uses the farm, but we have an education internship program that's on the farm, and to support that internship program, the farm sells at the farmer's market, and we use some of those funds both to pay us and also to pay for the farm to be open for education. The other is a grow and eat together program. And that program is where volunteers can come, get educated, get involved, take a tour, volunteer, whatever they want to do, learn as much as they want at the farm. So yeah, the farm is supported through sales of produce. It's also grants and donations and, our fundraising efforts.
Now, if you're convincing people not to or to raise their own food, are you choking off some of your own revenue supply?
I would love it. Yeah. You know, the hard part about being in development work is that the ultimate end result is if everyone does what you say, you don't have a job. And if you talk to most development workers, that would be a hallelujah moment. They'd just be like, yes, I don't have to do this anymore. People got it. Especially post COVID and pandemic, food security and food costs are more than ever on our minds. When we started the nonprofit, it had a lot to do with climate change and also economy. We were just coming out of the 2008 economy, you know, the housing market bubble. And so we were dealing with this kind of similar issues. We need more and more people growing their own food. And of course, you can't grow everything. So you got to still go to the farmer's market. But like, you know, if you buy, say, I don't know, our eggplant or our squash, and you're using your basil and onions, and we're happy, you know, that's great. At the market, we actually teach people how to grow their own food if they don't want to come to the market anymore, which is kind of what you're saying. We're kind of working ourselves out of a job. But there's so much need for healthy produce and, you know, fresh produce. We're not really worried at this moment. Maybe, hopefully, that'd be great 10 years from now. I can retire, go sit on a beach somewhere.
Well, I don't know you that well, but I'm guessing that that's not exactly where you'd end up. So like describe the farm to me.
So the farm is out in Colton, and so we got the farm in 2008. The nonprofit started in 2011, and we had our first interns and volunteers in 2010 and 11. So one of the huge issues is how do you educate and train the next generation of farmers, homesteaders, market gardeners, whatever you want to call it. There's many terms, and do it legally. There's the number one way is if you're a nonprofit. There's other ways. There's other great programs that we and our friends that are doing great work So like Rogue Farm Corps or someone like that. We love them and we work with them. But we're just more geared on if you cannot, say you're a junior college student and you're paying for rent and you're paying for gas and car insurance and you have a part-time job and you can't live on a farm for a whole season. You can come to us one day a week for 4 weeks, or you can come to us all the time. So our farm was, the idea of our farm was, as many people at whatever level they want. You want to become a farmer, you just want to see what a farm's like, whatever it is, at whatever level, our farm's there to educate you and we'll take the time to talk to you and teach you. The farm, that was the goal of the farm, to train the next farmers, but also just anybody who wants to come, really. We'll always say, like, our 5 second elevator speech is like, we'll teach anybody at any level to grow food. You know, if you want to grow 3 pots to have basil and green onions and, you know, a tomato plant, or you want to start your own small market garden farm, small acreage, sustainable farm, we'll teach you. We're just excited about people growing and eating their own food.
And what's
farm's a big part of that.
If that's the 5 seconds thing, what would be the most important thing you feel like you teach to people, the most elemental thing that the lesson you keep coming back to about here's what you need to know about growing?
I came up here with the idea that I'd be teaching really almost like maybe high school science or even college science. But the real thing is that most people, even people who've been gardening for a while, don't know that we have to feed our soil and our gardens. So the 3 things that I teach the most, the basics, are soil needs food, seeds, how to handle seeds, and how to water correctly. A lot of problems happen with seed, like how you plant seeds and then how you water. But the big problem is that first season, the food doesn't grow very well. And the second season, you almost get no food. And then they didn't know that the soil they got from the garden center didn't have any food in it. It was just dirt. So like, how do you add compost, or how to add amendments to feed the soil, to feed the plants? So a lot of the basic, a lot of what I teach is soil, how to amend the soil, and then how to plant seeds correctly and how to water correctly. Those 3 big ones. Watering is a huge one, that people, overhead watering isn't really that helpful. So they waste a lot of time overhead watering.
Okay. That's where I was going to go next was right. So just spraying water on.
Yeah.
So you want to get a hose underneath there. Or you want some.
Yeah. So you try to use market, we try to teach the farming methods to the gardener. So at our farm, when we water, or say our broccoli plant, it's a drop of water every second for an hour and a half. And we do this every other day. So they're getting 3 hours of water every other day, or every 3 days. So it's drop, 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 drop. And so if you overhead water, when you just stand there for 20 minutes and you're overhead watering, that water only gets maybe as deep as like a quarter of an inch, half an inch, doesn't get down to the roots. So they spend all the time watering. The water gets right on the soil surface. 100% of it evaporates. You get that hard pan, you get that hard crust. And then now the worse and worse and worse and worse it gets, the pan gets thicker. And we can all use images of a dried out lake bed with big cracks in it and garden beds. There's no water getting to the roots. A lot of times I'll just ask people, how'd your tomato plants go? And they're like, oh, the only thing that can grow is tomatoes. And the reason why your tomato plants grow so well is that they don't really need that much water. So your bad watering method's hurting everything, but it's actually helping the tomatoes. So the tomatoes are doing great. So what we call it is deep soaking. So you put your hose down by the soil, right by one plant, not the whole bed or not the whole pot, but by one plant. And you soak it. You switch the garden hose nozzle to soaker. And you put a lot of water at your one plant for 3, 4, 5 seconds. And you get a pool of water and it builds up. You pull the water off. And the faster that water sucks down, the more water your soil needs. So the water is falling, gravity is pulling the water down through the macro and micro pores in your soil. And the faster, the more that soil has more air and less water, the faster that water goes down. So if you put water on your plant, it sucks down immediately, goes down, you need to put more water. But if you put water in your plant and it just sits there and it pools, you're done. Your water's, the water, there's enough water. We got to remember the soil. If you're walking on a beach and your feet are hot on the sand, you just kind of kick your feet down a little bit and it gets cooler. So it's the same thing in our pots and our beds and our farms. The soil cools down, so the roots are in the cool, wet soil. So as long as it's if it's 100 degrees outside, but the roots are in the cool, wet soil, your plant will be fine. So typically people tend to overwater. Number one way plants die, is not watering them. Number two way plants die is overwatering them. And unfortunately, the plants look exactly the same if they don't have enough or too much water. So when they start to look like they don't have enough water, people tend to overwater again. And people come out on a 100-degree day in my garden, in my front yard, and go, why aren't you out here watering? And I'm like, because I deep soak. And I'll teach people that are walking dogs or walking around my neighborhood how to deep soak. And so that's a big method. And just imagine trying to get an hour and a half of drops of water into your bed in 5 seconds. So 10 seconds, 15 seconds. My 4-year-old daughter could take care of my garden. Your 5-year-old son could take care of your garden. It's not hard once you learn how to do it. But it does create problems if you just overhead, you just use a nozzle and you just stand there and it doesn't really help your roots at all.
And who's coming to you? Who's coming to you to learn this and to become the, you know, future farmers, whether we're talking, growing basil at home or doing something a little bit more ambitious?
It's the whole board, a lot of right out of college, families that are kind of moving back to the idea of growing their own food or moving their own land, want to have homesteads. High school students come, families with kids come. It's just the whole everybody who's interested in just getting closer to their food. For instance, this year, we've had this trend with the internship program where young, more in the late 20s, not right out of college, but more like you went to college, you got your first job, kind of got out in the farming world, or sorry, the business world, and realized I don't want to be doing this and I want to get back to the earth. And then starting their own little small farm business. We have interns that bought land in Michigan, starting their farm, going to the farmer's market for the first time. We have interns that are trying to start like a health retreat center where you can go meditate and do yoga and eat the food that's grown there. You know, it's a little bit of everything. People who just can't afford food. Second language speakers, BIPOC, everything. It's people. This is a hot topic, as you know. That's why you're reaching out to me. Post pandemic, food security, food costs. This is a hot topic, and it's a huge topic internationally, nationally, citywide, countywide. You know, this is cool stuff, and it's weird. It's like everything. It's like riding a bike. When you don't know how to ride a bike, it's almost impossible to teach. But once you ride a bike, it's like you can't forget it. So like we have that goal of just kind of working through these little weird tricks. And once you get the tricks, you can grow food. The big thing is trying to get people to get so much food out of their garden beds, they have to give to their neighbors. You know, they're so successful, they can't eat it all. And you're a friend or a person you know is a good gardener if they're offering you squash. They have so much squash, they can't eat it. They're doing good, right? So we're trying to get to that point.
Matthew Brown is co-executive director and community outreach for Food Waves. This is the nonprofit Happy Hour on X-Ray FM. And now, did you have a chance to, we're going to take a little music break. Do you got a song that we could queue up?
Geez, that's great. We listen to a lot of John Prine.
All right, fantastic. Let's take a listen.
I ain't got nobody hanging around my doorstep. Ain't got no loose chain, just a hanging around my jeans. If you see somebody, would you send them over my way? I could use some help here with a can of pork and beans. I once had a family, but they up and left me with nothing but an 8-track. Another side of George Jones. I was in high cotton, just a banging on my 6-string, a kicking at the trash can, walking skin and bone. I could see your back porch if I close my eyes now. I can hear the train tracks, the laundry on the line. I'm thinking it's your business, but you don't got the answer. I'm knocking on your screen door in the summertime. Everybody's out there climbing on the trees now, swinging in the breeze now, hanging on the vine, dreaming about I don't need a fur coat. Underneath the dashboard, got some sweet potato wine. I can see your back porch if I close my eyes now. I can hear the train track through the laundry on the line. I'm thinking it's your business, but you don't got the answer. I'm knocking on your screen door in the summertime. I'm knocking on your screen door in the summertime.
This is Phil Bussey. It's the Nonprofit Happy Hour on X-Ray FM. As part of gearing up towards Earth Day, and as we are talking to some of the organizations that are part of Earth Day Oregon. Matthew Brown is co-executive director for Food Waves. I want to take a little step back. You've been talking about how you train people to become farmers. How did you learn? Somewhere along the way, you were in West Africa in the Peace Corps. But tell me, where did gardening, where did growing food enter into your life?
I came into it really late. It's a great question. In college, I was an environmental science major at UC Santa Barbara with the idea I was going to do third world work in Africa. So that's where the Peace Corps came in. The idea that I was working with then was to work with, agroforestry or work with soil conservation through, replanting trees or nitrogen fixing trees or just the impact on soil. So I kind of came from the economic, the social, the government, kind of like everything but planting. I came back from the Peace Corps, long story, but when my wife and I met my farming partner, Nathan, in the Peace Corps, but when we all came back, we were all going to try to stay in Africa and decided to come back. And I got my teaching credential as a marine science teacher. I'm teaching freshmen general science and then juniors and seniors marine science. And then a co-teacher started a gardening class. She had to leave to go take care of her mom who got ill. I took over the gardening class. I made it environmental horticulture, which is how do we grow food and how does it impact the environment? And the more that I was teaching about that, the more I realized I needed to grow food. So funny story is I would call Nathan, my farming partner, like the day before and go, Nathan, I know everything about farming except for how to grow food. How do I teach my students to plant seeds? So I'm about 35 years old. I'm 51 now. So this is in the mid 2000s. And I worked with farmers. I did everything, but never really farmed. When I started my environmental science class, started to garden at my house with my kids, started to garden at the high school, started doing that work. But it wasn't until I was, I moved up here at 39. So the first time I farmed was 39. I was just telling the story to the intern. The first time I went to the farmer's market with rain was with our first intern, Mike. And it was raining and I was really nervous that the food was getting wet. And Mike, my intern, said, Matt, the food gets rained on all the time. And I was like, that's so funny. So the first time, like my third farmer's market ever, it was raining. And I was worried about the rain, like damaging the food. And that's how, like, I didn't really know. I could go work in Washington, D.C. I could have a non-government organization in Africa, but I didn't know how to harvest a carrot. And so I really started, Nathan was the master farmer, my partner. And then since then, I've been farming. This is my 13th season, and I know what I'm doing too. But I was as bad gets. Killed many plants.
I mean, right? Sometimes though, it's better to come at things and having learned them yourselves rather than it just being part of your culture, how you grew up, and it just naturally, organically being part of your life.
Yeah. It was. It was the more you read and the more you pay attention to what's happening, the more the topic of, the closer you are to your food, the better. You know, like that's a theme that we hear all the time, Omnivore's Dilemma, Michael Pollan, all over, just get as close to your food as you can get. And I was having existential crises over Thanksgiving dinner. That was my big one. And post-Peace Corps, pre-starting Food Waves, was how do you eat a Thanksgiving dinner where you're not costing too, your footprint isn't too high on other people and your community and the environment. And I really just wanted to raise and harvest my own turkeys and raise and harvest some of my own food, winter squash or whatever. And that was a big driving point. It was just getting closer and closer to the food. And now, of course, I am right there. I'm in it.
Yeah. So what does your Thanksgiving dinner look like?
Now we have, we used to do our own turkeys. My partner had twins and it became a little bit too difficult. We had to drop goats and turkeys because this was too much busy work on the farm. But we buy heirloom turkeys now from New Season. And then everything we can is from the farm. Of course, you have seasoning and cheese and products like that. We try to trade stuff. But mostly now it's like Brussels sprouts, winter squash, butternut, you know, whatever, kombucha. We have our turkey, potatoes, onions, all that stuff comes from our farm friends at the market. Yeah, like it's all from our friends at the farms, at the market, and or as much as possible. Yeah, we went from nothing being our own or friends that grew their own to almost probably three quarters of it. So yeah, I don't feel so bad about that.
And so Thanksgiving usually marks the bookends your season, certainly at the farmer's market. It starts up here in mid-April. Yeah. What else does Earth Day mean to you?
Well, Earth Day is incredible. We do work at Gladstone Center for Children and Families, typically pre-COVID, and we're there, and it's pre-K and K, and their families and the teachers. And I think we teach anywhere from 250 to 350 people as an Earth Day event. And mostly what we're teaching then is that we put out seeds, and we put out starts, and we put out the end result so people can snack. So we do different colors. We try to teach people where that the food comes from soil and seed. Real food comes from soil and seed. And then we're trying to teach people the kids and their parents and to eat different parts of the plants. So the fruits and leaves and the stems and the roots and all the parts of the plants. So Earth Day is a big event. But, you know, for me, Earth Day, I know the historical contents of Earth Day. They were when voting age became 18, Richard Nixon was afraid he'd lose his reelection. And to get young people interested in reelecting him, they created an Earth Day in early 70s. I think it was 70, if I remember correctly. And it became huge and very popular. And it shows how young people, through what they're interested in, can make a huge effort impact. And when I was a high school teacher, I'd always use Earth Day as a huge teaching tool that young people can shake the foundations. And so many young people kind of feel isolated or can't do anything. And I was trying to teach them, grow your own food, you know, vote, be part of Earth Day. You know, Earth Day to me is like young people's voice and how they can change things. And it's a huge, great story. I believe Earth Day, of course, is an opportunity for anybody in the community to kind of think about their impact. And then, you know, you can't do anything really that's earth friendly, but you could do so many things that are earth friendlier. And so, you know, earth friendly is difficult. Earth friendlier is possible. We always try to teach on Earth Day, or the idea of Earth Day is the three R's: reduce, recycle, reuse. And recycle has got the limited impact. And that's usually the first step. Most people start to recycle and they feel that they're doing something. But the real, real way you impact is reuse and reduce. And so a lot of gardening and the techniques we teach is how do you reduce and reuse your impacts through growing your own food. Yeah. So, yeah, to me, there's a fourth R too, which is reading. Reduce, reuse, recycle, and then read. And don't watch our news or don't watch our stories. Read our stories.
Matthew Brown is co-executive director for Food Waves. Thank you so much for taking the time to
talk. Hey, Phil, thanks for reaching out.
Yeah, and good luck with the skunk war.
Yeah, it's ongoing skunk war. And if you're interested in talking to us at the meet, say hi to us at the Portland Farmers Market. If you're interested in coming out on the farm, you can reach out to us through our webpage, foodways.org. And we'd love to see you on the farm or at a garden or at one of our trainings. We'd love to meet you.
That sounds great.
Thank you so much for your time. Bye.
Yeah.
The Nonprofit Happy Hour is made possible by Beneficial State Bank, a certified B Corp that holds to what it calls a triple bottom line of social justice, environmental well-being, and economic sustainability. If your organization or business is interested in underwriting our show, please email Phil at mediamakingchange.org. The Nonprofit Happy Hour is a production of the Media Institute for Social Change and KXRY Radio, X-Ray FM. Our host is Phil Bussey. Our executive producer and editor is me, Carly Meisberger. Archives of past shows can be found on our SoundCloud page. Questions, comments, or ideas about the show can be sent to info@mediamakingchange.org. Thanks for tuning in.